Okay, so that's Hillel, the elder. He's the patriarch of the Hillel dynasty. And there's Shimon, Simon, the son of Hillel. Then there's Gamliel, the grandson. We will meet him next week. He will be called Rabban Gamliel. He's the first rabbi to have that title. We'll come back to that later on next week. And there'll be other Simons and other Hillels and other Gamliels, but this is the first generation. And of course, his famous colleague was Shammai, and the two were the final pair listed in our Mishnah as the great leaders in combination, heading the great court, the Sanhedrin. Hillel, famous for his forbearance, his patience, his humility, his interactions with even non-Jews, is legendary. There, the Talmud records his encounters with various converts, as well as the encounters of Shammai with various converts. Now, Shammai, we'll get to him in a moment, he seems a little bit more impatient with the converts. Well, Hillel is famous for his patience and kindness, etc., etc. And we studied some of the teachings of Hillel last week, and the most famous of all being, be of the disciples of Aaron the priest, loving peace, pursuing peace, loving people, and bringing them close to the Torah. And as we said last week, Hillel embodied those values and those principles throughout his life. So we record a final teaching in this chapter, in this Mishnah. There'll be more teachings of Hillel in other chapters to come. Who are you, Oymen? Hillel used to say, in other words, this was a common teaching of his, Im ein ani li, if I am not for me, me li, who is for me? If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? So the obvious question is Hillel suggesting that we should be narcissists? Is it, the me generation, right? They would love that motto in today's generation. We call them the me generation. Narcissism, it's all about me. It would seem, if you read Hillel very literally, superficially, that Hillel is promoting a narcissistic approach to life, because, if I don't take care of numero uno, if I don't take care of me, who will take care of me? But of course, nothing could be further from the truth. Hillel is not suggesting a self-centered, narcissistic approach to life, as we'll see from the second half of his teaching. Rather, he's teaching us individual responsibility. Kind of like with the... someone's there. Kind of like when the Rebbe first became Rebbe, when he assumed the mantle of leadership in 1951. So in his first public address, he delivered a discourse. And in there, in his address to the community, the new Chabad community, it was a very small community at the time. So in that famous address, you might call it the inaugural address of the Rebbe in 1951. So the Rebbe said, he reiterated a fundamental principle of Chabad. And this is really rooted in Hillel, in the Hillel philosophy. And that fundamental philosophy of Chabad that dates back, it originates with the philosophy of the Alter Rebbe, Shri Zalman of Liadi, is that man must serve God bekoyach atzmoy, on his own two feet. One of the fundamental ideological differences between Chabad, the first Rebbe Chabad, and some of his other Hasidic colleagues, other masters of the Hasidic movement, David, you're having some schnapps. was in this subject. They felt that there should be a culture, a religious culture, based on the tzaddik, the holy man, the saint. At the center of their society was the tzaddik. And there's a famous verse in the prophets, tzaddik b'emunusa b'emunasa yichya, the righteous shall live by his faith. So the Hasidic masters, the Polish Hasidic masters, they interpreted that verse in the following manner. So do not read it, the righteous shall live by his faith, but yichaye, that's a causative. They cause life, they bring to life, they give life. In other words, faith is not a grassroots movement from below upwards, starting from the simple, unlearned man, he develops his faith. Rather, faith is from top down, taught the other tzaddikim of Poland. The faith comes from the Rebbe. The Rebbe, b'emunase yichaye, he'll give you life, he will invigorate you with faith. And since the tzaddik's level of faith is so much higher than the faith of the simple Jew, so rely on the tzaddik. He will do all the spiritual work and you rely on him. He will carry you. So you're not walking on your own 2 feet, but you're relying on the tzaddik. And therefore, in the world of Polish Hasidim and Hasidic rebbes, often it was always tzaddik-oriented. The center of the religious community was the tzaddik. And laymen would visit the court of the tzaddik. He would speak, they would sing, and there was an atmosphere of inspiration. You came to be inspired. Your job wasn't necessary to become a great scholar, a great student of the Rebbe. The masses were not students. They were fans. He was the celebrity. He inspired. He was the charismatic leader. In Chabad, the Alter Rebbe would have none of that. He wasn't a showman. There were no shows in Chabad. In the Polish circles, courts, there was a tish, a table, and it was like a royal table. And the Rebbe sat at the head of the table like a king, and there was platters of fish and challah, you know, elaborate, and he would take a little sampling from each platter, and then they would distribute the food amongst the Hasidim. And they would, and part of the culture of the Polish Hasidim was everyone would compete to grab a piece of the challah from the tray that the Holy Rebbe had sampled. They call it shirayim. They would seize and grab the leftovers of the Rebbe. Whatever it was, the fish, the challah, and that was, they would sing, and they'd be inspired, but their job wasn't sitting and learning. Alter Rebbe had none of that. He wasn't going to superficially perform, put on a show for his Hasidim. No, he would give over Torah, discourses that you had to study with Chabad, with your mind, with wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, all three faculties of the mind. And you had to work hard, and you had to meditate. You had to be zboinen. You had to meditate and contemplate what you had studied till it ignited your heart and created emotions. And says the Alter Rebbe, that kind of inspiration, self-motivated, self-ignited emotions that you create as a product of your Chabad, of your understanding of God, that lasts, that changes you. That transforms you. It's a permanent fixture. It becomes you. And Maimonides actually said that. What is the way to attain love and fear of God? To meditate on the greatness of God. So the Alter Rebbe said, there's no shortcuts here. I'm going to show you, the Talmud speaks of Rabbi Yochanan, who came to the outskirts of Jerusalem, and there were two, and he saw a kid. And he says to the kid, which way to Jerusalem? And the kid says, there's a short way and a long way. But here's the catch. He was a smart kid. He said, it's a short but long way, and a long but short way. So Rabbi Yochanan, he thought he was outsmarting the kid. He said, give me the short but long way. No problem, says the kid. But remember, I told you, short but long, long but short. So he follows the, how far is this short road from Jerusalem? 100 yards. So Rabbi Yochanan takes the short but long. He gets to the end of the road. Mountains of trees, bushes, thorns, you can't get through. Physically impossible. You can see the gates, but you can't get through. So he goes back and he complains to the kid. And the kid says, didn't I tell you it was short but long? And he realized, Rabbi said, I got outsmarted by a kid, said Rabbi Yochanan, right? So he gave him the other path, and it was long, but it was direct. No obstacles are led straight into the city. Says the Alter Rebbe, you want the short but long? You go to the other Rebbes. It's short because you'll be inspired, but you never get in because you're not part of the inspiration. It's not your inspiration. It's inspiration coming from the atmosphere, from the Rebbe. The moment you leave the Rebbe's court, inspiration dissipates. So you never enter Jerusalem. I'm writing a book for the average Jew. I'm opening the door to Jerusalem for every Jew to enter. Right? Every Jew has access. But it's hard work, says the Alter Rebbe. Don't think I'm going to do the work for you. I'll give you the theory. I'll give you the discourses. But you have to sit and learn them. If you don't know how to learn them, you go to someone who'll teach them to you. Right? That was the work of Chabad. Those Chassidim were called Chagas, emotional, and Chabad was called the intellectual. But we both wanted to get to the emotions, but the Alter Rebbe wanted genuine emotion. Emotions that are not momentary, inspired by an exciting show, but are the results, the byproducts, the birth of your hard work. Clear? So
there's a related story. A young man carrying a violin case gets into a taxi cab in New York, and he asks, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? And the cab driver says, practice.
Yes, excellent. Exactly. And that's why in the beginning, there, you know, not everybody wanted to be Chabad Chassid, because it was the hard road. It was so much easier, and you know, like they say, water takes the path of least resistance, so do human beings. Why do I have to go to a religious community where I have to work hard, when I can go where it's easy? Have a piece of kichel, a challah, an inspiring word, beautiful, and they were inspiring. The other Rebbes were holy people, and it was very inspiring. And it was charismatic and magical. And the music was moving. And it lifted you to it. But, you know, you went home. And now you're on your own. The Alter Rebbe said, no. It's got to come from within. And therefore, there were less Chabad Chassidim in the beginning. Because it was a much harder road. And that's exactly what Hillel is talking about. Hillel said, "Im ein ani li, mi li." If I don't do the work for myself, who will do it? No one will do it for me. It's exactly what the Alter Rebbe said. You can go to all the Rebbes, but at the end of the day, you're avoiding the issue. You're really not fixing yourself. You're relying on somebody else to do all the work for you, but you're not changing. He made an illicit Hillel. Hillel said, fundamental truth of Judaism, a fundamental truth of religion. We're here to become better people, better human beings, better Jews, to grow in our knowledge of God and grow in our religious devotion. How do you grow in your religious devotion? Through learning. Not by going to a Hasidic, beautiful, inspiring atmosphere. Through hard work. So the Alter Rebbe's Chabad system was rooted directly in this Hillel ideology. If I am not for myself, who will be for me? I can't, you know the famous story? Gentleman said, when I was young and idealistic, I had plans. I was idealistic. I was going to change the world. And then I realized I can't change the whole world. It's too big. So I narrowed my scope, my target. I'm going to change my country. But you know, he lived in Russia. It's a big country. It's too big. So you know what? I'll change my community. And then he tried to speak to people and he realized that's a tough job too. And so the story continues and finally concludes, I realize that the only one I can change, that I have the authority and the ability and the power to change, is myself. And that's the fundamental truth of religion. And that Hillel is reminding us of this. The only one who can change me is me. Yes, you have a teacher. He can guide you. He can advise you. You know, the Alter Rebbe wrote a book of Tanya to help you out. But at the end of the day, you got to read the book. Or you got to find a teacher and study with him. And then you have to apply the teachings and do the hard work. No one can do that for you. And of course, that's true. Not just of religion, of course we can apply that to life as well. You know, there are many applications of this principle, but Hillel speaking first and foremost as Jews. But it's true of everything in life. You know, we live in a society today where people are waiting to have an accident at work or to fall in a very expensive department store, so they can sue and make a lot of money. Or, you know, go down to Hollywood. Everybody who's working at, you know, 7-Eleven or a 99-cent store, they're all writing screenplays. Their actor's about to be discovered. We're going to become a millionaire, right? Everybody's waiting for the break to write a book, get discovered, write a book, make a movie, become an in. What about hard work? Okay? And I'm not necessarily promoting going to college, but you know, what happened to going to college, getting an education? If I want to better myself, I'm the answer. And of course, this gets into political ideology as well, because you've got different values today. Half our country doesn't believe in this anymore. I think this was once upon a time a very American value, right? I built myself up. How many people went, staked their claim, worked the land? Nobody helped them. They built themselves up. How many rags to riches stories did we have, you know, 100 years ago? How many Jews came from Germany and they were merchants and they would travel with wagons and sell pots and pans and food to Indians, to mining towns, to little shtetla. And those little itinerant merchants became Bloomingdale's and Sears and Roebuck and May Company and Robinson May, etc., etc. Right? And that, where did they get that from? It's a very American thing. But it's really a religious belief rooted in Hillel. Im einani li mili. Don't rely on anybody but me. You want to become the next billionaire? You look at it right there. And that's why, but of course, we live in a society that resists this fundamental principle of Hillel so much. They fight against it. We have a culture, a counter-Hillel culture. What's the whole idea of the lottery? And you should tackle play and win, and then, you know, we'll talk. When we build the new Chabad, we buy the new Chabad house. But what is that old philosophy? It's looking for a quick fix, etc., etc., etc. Okay, it's such a really important principle of Hillel, you know. And it's interesting that it takes someone so humble as Hillel. It's funny, isn't it? You would think that this would come from an egocentric individual, a teaching like this. Now, humility is not stupidity. Humility is not denial. It's not low self-esteem. People mistake humility with low self-esteem. Hillel knew exactly that there was no, as humble as he was, he realized that there's only one Hillel. Moses was the most humble man on the face of the earth. He was no fool Moses. He knew he was Moses. He knew there was no one else like him. He just figured, as the Rebbe once explained, that if God had given all the same, I mean, everything else being equal, have God given all the same abilities and natural talent that Moses was born with to another Moses, the other Moses would have done a better job. But it doesn't mean that Moses denied who he was. He was the tallest, strongest, smartest guy around, and he knew it. And Hillel also knew. And so Hillel, humility does not preclude ambition. You see, you can be totally humble. And in fact, someone who's humble will succeed more because he's not fighting with everybody along the way. His ego is not going to, because when you have ambition, but you got ego, then every opportunity when you're in every encounter with a fellow human being is a battle, is a struggle. You're not going to succeed very quickly that way. But anyway, so just an interesting observation that the most humble man of the generation is talking about ambition. Okay, let's go to the next part. What else did Hillel say? Part one. Part two. The converse. Ukishani la'atzmi. But if I'm only for myself, money, then what am I worth? What am I? So here you see clearly a clarification of his first idea. He was not suggesting, I'm the center of the universe. And there are plenty of people who are the center of their own universe, right? Narcissists. He wasn't suggesting that. How do you know? Because from the rest, the second part, what was he saying? Because if all I stand for is me, ma'ani, then what really am I? What worth am I? You're worth nothing. If all you have at the end of the day in your profile, right, is what you accomplished for me and for me and more me, then what do you have? You got nothing. Reminds me of the famous story. They tell this story about few people, but I believe I heard it. It was a very wealthy fellow called, what was his name? Shimshon Wertheimer. Shimshon Wertheimer. In Europe, In the 19th century and the 18th century, there was a unique kind of lay Jewish leader. We call them a shtadlin. Usually was a very wealthy, like a magnate, a Jewish magnate, like Moses Montefiore, along that style. And they usually had powerful connections with royalty. Sometimes they even worked in the royal courts as advisors, diplomats, statesmen. And this was quite common in the 8th and 19th century. The Moses Montefiore didn't have a position in a court, but he was so wealthy that many courts were beholden to him, as with the Rothschilds. Okay, but there were great Jewish magnates, statesmen who represented the Jewish people, who were had political positions in various governments, and in the government of one of the Kaisers was Shimshon Wertheimer. He was a German Jew, very wealthy man. He was the most wealthy man. I think it was Frankfurt am Main was the community. I could be wrong. I have to look it up. But anyway, so the story, I believe, is with him. But they retell the story about others as well. With Montefiore, they tell the story too. That he was once accused of embezzling money from the royal coffers. You know, there was always anti-Semitism. There were always other statesmen and ministers were jealous of the success of the Jewish statesmen, who were usually very wise and had the ear of the king, the Kaiser, whoever it was. And so that always attracted jealousy. And so these Jewish statesmen would often be denounced by their detractors and their opponents. So Wertheimer was once denounced as embezzling money from the royal court, something like that. Yeah, so the king didn't want to believe it. Anyway, he called in Rabbi Wertheimer and said, "Tell me, how much are you worth? We're going to check the books." So he made a statement of how much he was worth, and they sent some auditors to audit his books. He had a palatial estate where he lived, and the royal auditors came, they investigated, they checked, came back to the Kaiser, the king, and they complained that the books did not match Rabbi Wertheimer's statement as to his net worth. This was a problem. So the king summons Shimshon, Reb Shimshon Wertheimer, before him. "So Reb Shimshon, I am very disappointed. I asked you the other day, what is your net worth? And you quoted me whatever it was, how many millions of francs. We checked your books in your office, and according to the books, your records, your holdings don't match what you described. There's a major discrepancy." So Rabbi Wertheimer, he smiles, he turns to the Kaiser, says, "Let your majesty, let me explain. You asked me my net worth. What am I worth? What does Hillel say in the Mishnah? Ma'ani, what am I worth?" So he said, "My holdings, my assets, that's not my worth. That could disappear tomorrow. You could seize my assets, Your Highness. There could be a war. There could be the economy, you know, anything could happen. I can lose everything, my wealth overnight. That can be taken away from me. What can't be taken away from me, what I measure my net worth, is what I've given away in tzedakah, in charity." And he was an incredible philanthropist. That's the other side of these great Jewish magnates. They would support every Jewish cause that they could with their great wealth. He said, "If you go back to my, I'll stay here, go back to my estate, go to my room, go to my desk, there's another drawer, here's the key, and there you find my charitable ledger. And you will find there, if you add it all up at the bottom, it's exactly the net worth I described to you. That book describes what I'm worth. Isn't that a beautiful story? And that's what Hillel is saying here. He says, my net worth is what I is everything I gave away, everything I did for the community, everything I did for others. That's what I am. So here's the paradox. But only a humble man can live with the balance of such a paradox. On the one hand, I'm responsible for my own education, my own enlightenment, my own improvement, spiritual, moral improvement. And yet, if that's all I am is about me, then I'm worth nothing. What am I worth? Money is for the community. Everything that I gave away to the community, and Hillel, of course, he embodied this. It wasn't just talk. He gave his life serving the community. Teaching, he was a communal figure, right? And so here we have another fundamental truth of Judaism. That on the one hand, we value the individual. Each individual is important, right? And this is, a big philosophical debate. What's more important, the community or the individual? So there were people in Europe who said it's the individual. And there was nationalism, the rights of the individual. And today in our country, it's gone to the extreme, where everybody's got absolute rights, even at the sacrifice of the community. Even if passing the law for an individual might make the community unsafe, we put the individual over the community. Judaism disagrees. Judaism, which is more important? They're both important. Individuals of infinite value, and at the same time, a community is of infinite value. They're both equally important. And you have to balance them both. So you have to value the individual. At the same time, what are you worth as an individual? You are worth what you contributed to the community. That's how you measure your net worth. What you contributed to your community, that's what you're worth. And on the other hand also, Hillel is saying something interesting. No man is an island. Someone probably said that once, right? No man is an island. As Maimonides says, we're social beings. We're part of a community. You cannot live in isolation. Yeah, it's nice to daven on your own if you got no choice. But if you got a minyan, you go to a minyan. Or at least let the Jews gather to pray. Right? Because the community, the strength in the community, the community, you contribute, but you gain a lot more than what you contribute. A simple example. Somebody belongs to a minyan. How many times do we hear a horrible story of an individual lives alone, and months later they find the body? It happened in our community. Actually, it was a young man. Unfortunately, he stopped belonging to the Jewish community. And unfortunately, I got a call from his son, who didn't live with him, but he was younger than me. And they found him weeks later, all alone in his apartment. But it's more common with older people, right? But if you belong to a community, could you imagine if you live in a community with a minyan every day, and Chaim didn't show up for the minyan? So everybody's worried. And suddenly Chaim gets 20 calls. Chaim, how are you? Where are you? Why did you come to shul? Right? And if he's gone for 2 days, 3 days, everybody's knocking on the door. And that's a simple example of how the community takes care. It contributes back to you even more than you contribute to the community. You're not alone. You know how, and that's another powerful thing of the Jewish people. Non-Jews don't understand that sometimes. You know, the power of the kohol, of the Jewish community, is so strong. And that's why always Jews belong to a community. Unfortunately, one of the casualties, the collateral damage of assimilation in America is the disintegration of the Jewish community. And with it, people who don't belong to the community, they live in total isolation. I mentioned that I traveled to Panama. You know what was wonderful about Panama? No one lives disconnected from the community. Everybody contributes to the community, but in turn, they're all part of the community. Even if they're not religious, they belong to the synagogue. They go to the synagogue. Everybody participates in community life. So it's a beautiful situation because the community is strong, there's strength in numbers, but the individual is also strengthened by the community. That's what Hillel's saying. Hey, Mananili, if I'm just by myself, then I'm nothing. But if I'm part of the community, my strength is multiplied by the power of the community. And the truth is, in Judaism, it's not just multiplied by as many individuals, it's an infinite number. Because there's an infinite quality to a community. Community almost has a life of its own in Judaism. A tzibur is bigger than the sum of the individuals. And that's why you find a concept in Judaism that a community never dies. Tzibur einam eis. It's an infinite being. And unfortunately, really, I think one of the real tragedies of American life, and someone should probably write a book about it, is the disintegration of Jewish community. You got a federation, you got a Jewish family, that's not Jewish community. That's where people who are not part of the community go when they're in trouble. We have a totally fragmented community, unfortunately. Okay. So I think Hillel's words are really, really important. And we'll conclude with Shammai. Actually, maybe we'll leave Shammai for next time. It's 8:00. Okay. Okay, any questions, guys?